This week on the Big Podcast with Shaq, we're joined by our buddy Adam Carolla.
Everybody always asks me, what's the difference between raising the boy and raising the girl? Raising the girl is like raising three kids, and raising the boy is like raising one old cat.
Plus, you never know what will come up on the show.
When do you start decorating for Christmas?
I don't receive presents, nor do I decorate my house. I just wait till Christmas Eve. Then I call Rudolph and Ranter and Prancer and Vixen and Stixon and Stone Age and Rudolph, of course.
So you're saying black people do not know the names of the other reindeer. They do know Rudolph.
I'm just saying I don't.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
That's me. It's up right now at podcast1.com.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here with Rob has a podcast, a triannual tradition here on the podcast. It's something that we've been doing for such a while, and I've really lost track of even how many of these that we've done. This has got to be number like 13 or 14 with this man, one of the great RHAP guests. Here he is from ESPN.com. And from the author of How Fantasy Sports Explains the World. And yes, it's hot in here. Our good friend, AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
I'm doing good. I think by the time I get to my 20th chances, I'll have this down pat.
Yes. Yeah, you said forget about second chance. You're here. You get three chances a year for this.
Yeah, and one of these days, I'm telling you, one of these days I'll get something where everyone goes, you're absolutely right, AJ.
Yeah. One time you will totally get it all right. How's everything going? What's up, Brochacho?
What's up, Brochacho?
Oh man, it's going good. It's going good. We are recording this, and it is not snowing yet, but it just has this feel that the weather's going to turn, and suddenly fall will turn into winter, just like in a heartbeat. It's crazy. The weather here is just absolutely insane.
Yes, it's that time of year, and it's almost like it's an early merge. I don't know if in the Farmer's Almanac it called for that. Did the groundhog see his shadow? Is that why there's early merge this season?
Yeah, I think Shane Bowers saw his shadow and disappeared back into his hall or something.
Sore subject.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so of course what we're going to do here today is we're going to go through all of the 13 archetypes which AJ outlined in How Fantasy Sports Explains the World about the ideal people that you would want in any sort of fantasy league or competition or any sort of multiplayer setup that you're going to have. These are the 13 ideal archetypes. He's going to match them up to the 13 players left in the game, and then we'll do our draft, which is typically really pear-shaped. I feel like when I win, it's close. And then when AJ wins, it's just a total blowout.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes the momentum builds and you, that first pick breeds the second pick and the third pick. And then sometimes I end up losing. So
once in a while. Okay, so just to set this up. So there are 13 archetypes. I'm sure we have some people that are listening to this for the first time. And they are... Let me rattle them off, and then we'll sort of and then people can follow along. They are the fresh meat. That is the person who sort of doesn't know what they're doing. There's the ninja. That's the person that we can't think of. There's the cheerleader, the person who is the rah-rah person in the group. There's the narcissist, which is self-explanatory, the narcissist. There's old reliable. That's our steady Eddie. We have our idiot savant, the person who is sort of, you don't know how they're doing what they're doing, but they're doing it. There is the marriage of convenience, which is two-part, and there's an alpha and a beta. That's the dominant person and the less dominant person in that marriage of convenience. There's the loose cannon, which, again, is self-explanatory. There's the diplomat, who's like the good negotiator in the group. You'd want that person to be the commissioner, right?
Yeah, that should be the person who you trust with to date your sister or slash brother, yes. Depending on which one you got.
There is the Captain Loophole, which is the person who knows all the angles and is always trying to cheat the system. There is the X Factor, the person who is not like everybody else. There's the mad scientist, again, the person who is as it is described, a mad scientist. And then there is the other part of the marriage of convenience.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, those are our categories there. Very good. Very well done.
And we are going to match our 13 remaining Survivor players up to these people. And this was a little bit of, it was a good thing we got sort of a heads up from the promos that there was going to be a evacuation this week. So that got us down from 15 to 13.
Yeah, it did kind of sneak up on us this year. I was I kind of was sketching it out, but I was kind of waiting to feel it out a little bit more. Then all of a sudden it was like, oh, I got to do this now.
Yeah.
I was hoping to get one more episode in there to get a feel for some of these new relationships after the tribes moved yet again. But we'll see. We'll see what we can do here.
Yeah, it's been a wild season so far with all the tribe movement. And again, it looks like we're headed towards the merge this week. So again, more movement in terms of what we're doing. So it's been very exciting. And I think these players are really on their toes. What's been your take through six episodes of this season?
I think it's been fantastic. I think that just the fact that we know that all these players have played before, and so they don't have to ease any of them into the game like they would do with a bunch of newbies. I mean, Jeff Probst and his peeps are able to just play with them and say, you know, you think you know what's going to happen, we're going to throw everything at you. And I think from a fan standpoint, it's fantastic to watch because they're willing to take chances with the structure of the season that they wouldn't dare do with a bunch of newbies.
Yeah, very fun. All right, so let's go into this. And AJ, what is the order that you're going to be giving these to us?
All right, I'm going to give them from my lowest probability to make the final tribal and win all the way up to the most likely. And what we mean by this is not that the person who fills these roles is going to win or not, because you know, we start with fresh meat and work our way up. Fresh meat could win. It's not impossible. It just means the chances are the lowest for them to win. And, you know, a lot of times the lower seeds, as you were, we might call them lower seeds, they have a good chance of making it to the final because they're the kind of like the goat dragged along kind of thing, because their chances of winning are so low that sometimes they do get dragged along. But it's also the person who fills these roles could be really good at the game and could, you know, outkick the coverage, as it were, and do much better than the seed would indicate. I mean, there are upsets all the time in sports, and there are upsets in Survivor. So you could be the number one seed, quote unquote, and just be really bad at being a diplomat. And that means you're not going to win. So this is not who I think is going to win the game. It just means that these roles will tend to finish in these placements if you get a big enough sample size of seasons.
Yeah, I really like the way that you described that. Basically, this is like the start of the NCAA tournament. You didn't like at the start of the season say, oh, this person's a one seed, this person's a four seed, this person's a six seed. And we know that, you know, a one seed is probably going to win this thing. This is now at this point in time, this is now what we're looking at. And these are going to be our 13 seeds.
Right. And it's just a snapshot of where we are today. You know, events change, roles change as people get eliminated. Like when I put this together and crafted this kind of theory of 12/13, because marriage is two, you know, archetypes, they work together in unison. Once you take one of them out, which we'll do at the next elimination, people kind of shift their roles a little bit. And sometimes the role doesn't get filled in, but sometimes someone sees the opportunity and starts to take on that role. So, you know, it's very fluid. But this is a snapshot of where we are now, and people tend to stay in the roles over the course of the season from this point out. But by taking on different attributes, that also kind of is why we don't necessarily say, ah, the diplomat's going to win. You know, it doesn't work out that way all the time.
All right, well, let's jump right in and give us who is the number 13, or what is the number 13 archetype we're talking about?
Well, and this is fresh meat.
Okay.
And fresh meat is, generally speaking, in a normal season, it would be the person that you have no idea why this person was cast on the show, because they don't seem to realize that they're playing a game. They don't understand Survivor. They don't know what they're doing. And you're just wondering, how did they last this long? You know, they're just totally clueless out there. Obviously, we're dealing with a second chance this season. It's a little different because obviously everyone's played before. So no one's truly fresh meat. But there are a couple of players who seem to still haven't figured out that they're quite playing Survivor. There's still a few of them out there. So it wasn't impossible. I was going to put Wu in this spot, had he survived this last, vote here, because Wu still seems to be this every tribal like, whoa, really? Oh my, like he really looked clueless out there, like he didn't know what was going on, despite him saying that, no, I'm ready to play now. You know, like, it just didn't work. So this would have been Wu. forced me to juggle at the last minute here. And I've put Keith Nail in this spot.
Okay.
I still don't think he quite grasps what Survivor is. I really don't. I mean, he does okay in the challenges, absolutely. And I think he's got a better feel for that, oh, yeah, this is a social game. But I still think when push comes to shove, when he's asked to stick to the plan, he's not going to quite understand what that means.
Yeah, I just feel like Keith, as a player, in watching him in 1.5 seasons, I feel like his whole sort of being out there is like, boy, I hope some people come over and, you know, want to work with me. Like, Keith is never going to be the one that comes up with an idea. He's just like, oh, boy, this is great. I got 5 people that want to work with me. The last time it's like, okay, well, I got, you know, oh, great. Natalie wants to work with me. So you never really hear Keith coming up with anything on his own. I think he's one of the few players in the game that don't have that.
Yeah, and I just think, like, you know, he's the type of person who's like, you know, in with 6 people, and then you know, the 6 people kind of say, hey, we're going to go down to 5, and he's like the type of person who's going to go up to the 6th person and says, yeah, we got that 5. I mean, 6. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he's quite on the same level as everybody else out there.
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say that he's the fresh meat. I think that he would probably appreciate that in some way, because that fresh meat implies like young newness.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as long as you don't, as long as you're not playing with a meat collector.
Yeah, he did that one.
I'm a meat collector.
And I think we all. I mean, I'm sure, although Keith certainly has his fans out there, I don't think there's anyone who's really thinking that Keith is on the list of favorites to win.
No, I think that you'd probably really put him on the outside, because at least in San Juan del Sur, he was sort of like this fun character, and he certainly like had his appeal. But I mean, this season, he would probably almost be in the running for the ninja.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If it wasn't for the fact that he's like been front and center in so many of the challenges, I think, yeah, for good or for bad, you know, his performance has not been steady Eddie there either. But I think he did slip into the background. But of course, everyone kind of did if they weren't on Anchor, you know, because that tribe kind of got all the attention for a couple of weeks. And it was easy for a lot of people to kind of fall into the background.
Yeah. And unless he makes some sort of like huge gaffe in the next couple of weeks, I mean, Keith Nail's not going anywhere this season.
No, I don't think anyone. And that's what I'm saying about this being a chances of both making the final tribal and winning. You know, if it was just making the final tribal, I think perhaps Keith has a good shot because, like I said, he's someone you're not afraid of. Certainly, you don't think he's going to out-argue you at the final tribal, and he's not going to be someone who's going to be plotting against you. Not really, certainly not initiating it. So he could go a long way, but it doesn't, I mean, once he gets there, I mean, do we think he's going to win? No, I don't think he has that within him, unless it's, you know, some sort of jury nullification kind of thing.
And it's funny because in the final tribal council of San Juan del Sur, you looked at him as a guy who had a pretty good shot to win it because he had his son on the final tribal council, and it was all those guys that were sort of like anti-Missy and stuff like that. And you felt like he had good relationships in that season, but this season, I'm just not seeing it with these other players that are really like playing the game very fast.
Yeah, I think it's he would have had to have a lot of the people who have already been voted off still be there for him to have even a shot, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a lot of fresh meat type personalities that are gone already. So, like I said, if the longer Wu had stayed there, you know, we talk about it being a meat shield. I mean, a fresh meat shield, Wu certainly would have fallen into that as well. So who knows?
All right. So that's number 13. What's number 12, AJ?
Number 12 is the ninja.
The ninja. And no ninja stealth mode for the ninja this week.
No. Again, Wu pouring out the 40. Yeah, the ninja is the person that if you were to list the players remaining at this point of the game, they'd be the person that you forget, that the last one that comes to mind. You're like, oh, yeah, who else is there? They're probably not getting a lot of confessionals in a normal season. And I mean, this was lining up to be Monica for the first. I mean, this was totally, I was like, oh, well, Monica's the ninja. And had she still been here, I don't think anyone would have questioned the fact that she was the ninja, because until her boot episode, you didn't see her at all. So it was kind of hard to really come up with the ninja per se, because we're talking with people that we know, and they're kind of trying to show everybody. And we've gotten rid of a lot of the quieter people.
Can I say that when we started doing this, I did make a list of who was still in the game. And there was somebody that I had the hardest time to come up with. I'm interested to see if they match up with your ninja.
Well, you know, I think someone on Twitter, I forget who, and I apologize. I think someone had tweeted...
another ninja.
Yeah, exactly. I get a lot of tweets sent to me. I can't be expected to remember everybody. No, it was kind of like, you know, I wonder who's going to be the ninja. And some people suggested that it perhaps would be Wigglesworth because she's been getting... such a silent edit and not getting a lot of confessionals. And that does kind of speak to her being kind of boring in terms of confessionals. But she's been front and center for a lot of this game. To me, although that was a good consideration, before this last episode, I wouldn't have remembered Sierra was in this game. Mm. And I've put Sierra here, even though she had a big role this week. I think that was more from a storytelling standpoint and trying to frame the narrative in a way that kept us guessing. I don't really think that Sierra has really been front and center. She's more of a reactionary player, certainly. And like I think this week, all her reaction was like, oh, you brought my name up? I better hide again by steering and pushing the direction somewhere else. So I think that is kind of the game Sierra is playing, is more of a quiet, I'll be in the background until you start to come for me. I think she wants to be the ninja, actually.
I had Wigglesworth as the person that I couldn't remember. And I disagree about Sierra in terms of like that she wants to hide, because I feel like that Sierra, that her whole game, I think, is like looking for the big move, where Jeff was the person who sort of congratulated her as like, Sierra, you're the person, you know how to make big moves. That's how you play the game. And she voted out her mom and she went to Rocks. And I feel like she's probably like always looking for what is that next thing that we could shake up. And even on my rewatch of the episode, I felt like that she is like, you know, beating the drum pretty hard to, hey, Andrew said that, that I'm going to be that. Like, no, I don't think so. She said, hold the phone.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
It's just, for me, before this episode, I didn't see a lot of Sierra at all before this episode. Mm-hmm. I think this was the first episode where she kind of did take front and center. And, you know, I actually...
Coming out party.
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually remember that she had voted out her mom. I don't think they've mentioned that at all this season. But I just think that she is kind of at the bottom end of this alliance, obviously, because her name came up as the one that they were going to float out there. And I don't think we've seen a lot of her interacting with anybody. I think this was the episode that kind of maybe thrust her back into the spotlight. And perhaps she won't be as much of a ninja going forward. But I don't really think anyone else qualifies other than Wigglesworth. But I think Wigglesworth fits into so many other categories. And I don't think Sierra quite does. It's an interlocking puzzle. Like I said, Wigglesworth as the ninja is not wrong. It certainly is totally viable. And I think she's probably the only other person I would have considered there. And I went back and forth, but this was the only place that it really fit when all the pieces fall into place.
Yeah. I really think that Sierra and Cass are sort of like that she's like, you know, there's Chaos Cass, but I think that the two of them are like the Thelma and Louise of this season, that they could just be like, you know, driving, not to say that their game is going off the cliff, but I think that there's people like Andrew and Jeremy sort of like want to have like this ordered. Okay. They want to sort of like just keep their five and go down to the end. And I feel like that they're the wild cards who want to sort of like upset the order of sort of a buy on Paganging.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And I think part of the difficulty of doing this season, different than all others, is that these are players who already had established personalities from their first go around, and some of them are trying to spin off of that, and some of them are trying to hide what they really were, but are, you know, and then they fall back into it. It's really difficult when you're talking with all returnees who are aware of how they're perceived by everybody else, and everybody has a perception of them. So it's a very complicated puzzle to kind of unpack in this season. It's very fun to try and do this. And believe you me, if other people, I'm sure, are going to come up with their own, you know, orders and 13, and that's great. All I'm trying to do is provide a structure for discussion. I mean, I'm certainly not going to dictate and say I'm right and everybody else is wrong. I just don't tell me I'm wrong. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's not nice, everybody. And that's what the comment section is for. Make your own list, not to tell AJ he's wrong.
Yeah, Yeah, and sure, if you can justify it and come up with your own explanations where everybody fits, I'm all for it. I want this to be a way that we look at the game and not necessarily a mandate from edict from on high saying that this is how it shall be and so it shall be done.
Yeah. Okay, what is number 11?
Okay, number 11 is the cheerleader. And the cheerleader is typically, the cheerleader can fall into a couple categories. It could be someone who is anything for the tribe, rah-rah, and someone who like always puts the tribe first in front of everybody else. And even after the merge and tribe swaps, it's always original this, original that, and not the outsiders have to remain the outsiders. We have to be ourselves. They could actually physically be cheerleading. They could be, there's usually a player who's like at all the challenges, who's very vocal, like, come on team, very supportive. Also could be the team mom or team dad in some seasons. This season a little different because of the casting, but generally in a normal season, you'd have one mother or father figure who kind of takes over a tribe based on the demographics and everything. Or it could just be someone who's really focused on the people, as opposed to the game itself. That's also kind of an aspect of the cheerleader, where it's someone who's going to console people, someone who's going to try and who is there to make friends rather than there to win the $1 million, that kind of thing. So it's a complicated role, but it usually fills that kind of slot. If you guys get what I'm going for here,
I don't know where you're going with this one. This is going to be good.
Well, that's the thing. It's a season where we've because it was not cast, it was selected by the fans based on this. It's not there. We don't have the traditional cheerleader role here. However, we have someone who is definitely on the show who has said that the only way they think they can win this game is to get to know the people and to be a people person and to really slot in there and show emotions and be there for his tribe mates.
Spencer?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's Spencer. And I don't think it's a winning game for him at all. But he has to use this camouflage if he has any chance at all to win the game, because everybody knows him as the Captain Loophole kind of person. It's one of these things where he's totally a Captain Loophole, but everyone knows that. So he's come in and taking on this other role to try and hide the fact that everybody already knows. It's very difficult and complicated.
Yeah. You originally, in Survivor Kagyan, had Spencer as Captain Loophole.
Oh, absolutely, because he was the super fan, and rightly so. I don't think anyone argued about that one. It's just that you're on a season now where there's multiple people who can fill that kind of super fan role, and everybody knows the game inside and out, who's played it to some level, you would think, certainly far more than one or two people. I think he's stated his intent is to try and be focused on building these relationships and showing emotion and vulnerability. And that's kind of more of a cheerleader role than anything else. And certainly with all the cutthroat players on this season, you're not really going to have that kind of, hey, I'm going to help everybody else. Everyone's here to win the game. I get that. I think he's going to come the closest to filling this role, although we don't have a true one this season.
And it's also funny, in Kagyan, you had Tasha as the original cheerleader. And
yeah.
I do think that she still has some of that. Like, I do think that, she really means business. And I think that if you piss her off, I think that she's going to get really upset with you. But especially like at Anchor, I felt like that she had a bit of that cheerleader still.
She did. And it's hard to get rid of it, although she at least, she was aware of it, and she wasn't going to be someone who was afraid to lie and deceive and everything. And so she was, stated going in that she's going to try and be a little bit more nefarious and a little bit out for herself. Plus, in Anchor, she was 2 versus 4. It kind of forced her not. She couldn't stick with just Tribe Alliance at that. She had to reach out and cross the aisle, if you will, because otherwise she'd have been gone.
Okay, so we have Spencer as the new cheerleader. Can you fake being the cheerleader?
Well, yeah, you could, like I said, people can be bad at being the cheerleader. Absolutely. Yeah. It could totally be a cover. I mean, I think like Dawn was someone who was a cheerleader, but it rubbed people the wrong way. And I think that people kind of held that against her. Whereas I think with like someone like Lisa Welchel, she was definitely the cheerleader in her season. I think people totally saw that and said, yeah, she's the cheerleader. Like they took that in at face value. So I think it can cut both ways.
All right. So we have the cheerleader. What about the narcissist? And this one might be a challenge for you, AJ. Pick one narcissist.
again. It's tough. It's so tough. I don't know. No, the narcissists, there are a lot of people here on this tribe, on these tribes, who really think they're the bee's knees, who think they are Superman. And it, a lot of this falls into where the other archetypes fall into place. I think that the narcissist totally, totally is Jeremy.
Jeremy, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think it,
he's not going to like that, AJ.
These guys are so dumb.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. It's true.
Hold on. Did he beat you in the Fantasy Football League recently?
No, I think he's the only person I beat this season. I'm not having a good year. Jamal Charles went down, and my team is just... forget it at this point. But I did beat Jeremy. No, man, no second chances because I'm not making the playoffs. So anyway. Yeah, I just think Jeremy is very self-assured, very physically fit and able to perform well in all these challenges. And, you know, tackling a hero challenge by himself is certainly evidence of his own self-confidence. He also, the way he's given advice to fish back and just, you know, like, oh, we have confidence in you. You need to have, like, that's a very narcissistic kind of thing. The way he,
this is narcissistic.
Hey, relax, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say so. You know, plus I just, you know, he went up and grabbed the balut. Just didn't ask. He's like, oh, no one's going to mind if I take a bite of this. Like, it's like, hello, Jeremy. No.
Yeah.
I just think he's a little overconfident right now. And that is a very key element of who the narcissist is.
Okay. And I'm surprised also not just to be the narcissist, but that's a little bit a ways out from, you know, the top tier of people who could make it far. I feel like that he is set up pretty well here. I feel like he has a lot of options.
Yeah, I think he has a lot of options. But as Jeremy himself would say, that, you know, you need to keep Joe in the game because he needs that deflection. Because the spotlight will be right on him if Joe's out of the game. And I think because Joe is very much a narcissist type of personality as well, and Jeremy recognizes that the two of them are both kind of in the same boat where all the attention is going to be on them if the other one goes. And so that's kind of why he wants Joe in there. He's aware of that people are going to notice him. And that's kind of part of what being a narcissist is not only being noticed, but being aware that you're being noticed. And, you know, I think there have been certainly less aware narcissists who have continued to say to everybody, hey, look at me. I don't think Jeremy's quite at the point where he's an oblivious narcissist, but he's a narcissist nonetheless.
Okay. Okay, AJ, next up we have our loose cannon. Do we have any loose cannons on this season?
I'm not sure if we do. I think this is a... Yeah, come on, Rob. This is the one that I wrote in pen before the season started. And she has not disappointed. It was just a question of whether she'd make it this far. And you know, in the past, I don't usually change the order of my rankings here, but especially in a season like this, these players know that taking a goat to the end is probably optimal strategy. So I actually bumped up Loose Cannon from 10 to 9 for this very particular reason here, is that I think she's going to be around for a while. As long as she doesn't completely go ballistic and do something physically to hurt somebody or something like that. I mean, we're talking Abby Maria, the one and only.
With me, your dad.
I'm sorry, Abby, you're only number 9. But I think her chances of making the final 4 are actually pretty good because... like I said, if she doesn't completely go nuts, who's going to vote for her to win? Nobody. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, why not tag her along as an extra vote if you can, you know, survive dealing with her?
Well, in Survivor Philippines, we were all sort of incredulous as to why would they even talk about voting her out? Like, we couldn't believe that they considered voting her out in that season. And like, to a person, when they came off, they said, no, you don't know how bad it was. So it's really so like they weren't thinking about her as a goat. They were like, we just have to get rid of her. But like to us as the viewers, we were all saying, like, why not take Abby Maria to the end? And I wonder if that's a thing that's sort of like tattooed in the brains of all these people who watched that season.
Well, yeah. And on top of that, I mean, we are, of course, also dealing with people who've played the game before, some of whom have, you know, made it all the way to the end and they didn't win. And they want to win. And I think it's a different mindset when you're going back here and say, look, if I have to, you know, you know, if someone like Varner was, you know, let's talk about Varner for a second. Like, how many years did he wait to get back on this show? Was he going to let the fact that Abby Maria was there bother him? No, he was like, I'm taking Abby to the finals. Because he knows if I can put up with her for 39 days and win, I'm going to do it. Because I don't want to wait 15 more years for another chance. And I think that's kind of the attitude you have to take with this group of people. It's not like a bunch of people going thrown in there who'd never played before. I think it changes things. It changes things immensely.
Yeah. So the Abby Maria thing, do you see any scenario where she could ultimately turn this around and maybe win people over? Like a Sandra who... You know, you might say, okay, well, she's not made a lot of friends so far. Do you think there's any way that she could potentially change the narrative?
No, because that's not who she is. And mm-hmm. I know you praised her early on for not reacting as badly as she possibly could have.
It was one show.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I think that speaks well to your ability to try and give everyone the benefit of the doubt. But I think she cannot win. Even if she gets to Final Tribal, I don't see any combination of two other people that she could be sitting next to where everyone at the jury would find her charming in her craziness. Mm-hmm. it's one thing if this was, you know, if she could get there with two people who are totally hated by everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say Chaos Cast becomes Chaos Cast and does all sorts of Chaos Cast things and makes it to the end and she's there with, you know, someone else who stabbed the last five people in the back. Like, I still even then don't think that she could sit there, you know, and she probably, someone's like, Abby, why should you win? What do you mean, why should I win? Like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm not going to vote for you. Like, I don't think it's in her to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that.
I wish it was, because, like, I think that would be the greatest, you know, like, I always said that if, and he wasn't this way, but if Philip had gotten to his final tribal after being wackadoodles, you know, and with all the nicknames and everything, and if he had gotten there to the last tribal and just said, everybody, I need to talk to you. And, you know, if the whole thing had been a long con, it would have been the greatest moment in television history. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's total fan fiction.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Abby winning is fan fiction.
Okay. Nobody disagrees with you on that.
No, and I don't think anyone disagrees with me that she's the loose cannon. I mean...
we're just doing our due diligence here but to avoid being dead.
With me, you're dead.
Oh, dear.
All right. Number 8 on the list.
Yes, number 8 is Old Reliable, and don't get hung up on old people. Old Reliable, it's a phrase.
Veteran Reliable.
Yeah, like I said, at this point...
It's a good thing. You can count on them.
Yes, exactly. It's the person who you know what you see is what you get. You know that they're going to be a solid challenge performer. Whether they have the social game or not, that's not relevant. It's just, this is someone who is potentially could... get to 6 people left and need to win out every challenge to win the game, and they're going to win out every challenge to win the game, and that's kind of what we're talking about here. They're challenge ready. You know what you're going to get from them. Now, they could also be someone who you know is going to finish second in every challenge or third in every challenge, but generally speaking, like I said, what you see is what you get. Traditionally, it has been kind of like this Southern cowboy kind of character. I must confess to that. Because it was Keith Nail in his season. But that's generally where an older male character who is the only older male generally fits. This year is different because we have a lot more of a mix of ages because we went back and pulled people from previous seasons. So it didn't necessarily have to be someone from that kind of a casting archetype. And it's not, because it's not an old person at all. So yeah, you shouldn't really get hung up on the old part of this.
Like a diehard battery that it's just there. They're there when you need to go and start up the car.
Yeah, or even an Energizer still going.
Still going, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Holloway last season was the old reliable and needed to win out and happened to win out. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, he was like the Energizer Bunny with those challenges by the end of the season.
Yeah.
All right. So, who is our old reliable?
Our old reliable is old reliable Joe.
Old reliable Joe?
Yes.
Hey, I thought this was where you were going to drop the Wigglesworth bomb.
No. And again, possible. But I think with Joe, I think, I just think Joe is The only thing that's keeping him in the game at this point, once we get into a merge, is going to be his ability to perform in challenges. I just think he's too big of a target in terms of being that danger. But everyone kind of knows that he's going to do well at the challenges. So it's a position that if you can hide and not be a threat, but always finish second or third. Like I said, Keith was the Eldorado in his season, and he did well at challenges. He won a few immunities, and I think that's after a few wins in immunity, you have to go, oh my goodness, this guy, maybe we should get him out. I think it's a little more obvious on Joe, but that's kind of what he is.
AJ, what if I told you I thought that Joe was in a good position?
I wouldn't disagree with you. I think there's so much fluidity this season, and I think a lot of the people in this game are going to overplay. And you know, you've been thinking about it for so long to get your second chance, and all the players and confessionals are saying, my second chance, I'm not going to go out like that, I'm not going to go out the same way. And I just think a lot of people are going to overthink it. And Joe's game is winning immunity at this point once we get to the merge. And so that's something he can do. And yeah, he's playing a good social game and that kind of thing too. But to me, that puts him in a better position than anyone else because he can save his own bacon if he has to.
Because and please, that the bacon is having a tough week, AJ. So, but in terms of where Joe is in the game, I really feel like, you know, you have the Savage, like Jeremy group that's like really counting on Joe. And then I also think that you have Cass and Sierra who were at the new Takeo with him and Keith and Kelly, and they made that 5-person deal. And I feel like that group is counting on Joe. And I feel like that the Cass and Sierra group is going to be at war with the Andrew, Jeremy, and Tasha group. And I think that Joe is like smack in the middle. And I think that he has the Kelly and Keith nail votes. So I think that he's a really important swing vote. Forget that everybody's going to say, hey, let's vote him out. I think people are going to really need his vote these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that in general, putting Joe in the old reliable role means he is going to outkick his coverage in terms of, yeah, even though he's ranked eighth, old reliable is ranked eighth because a lot of times it's an older male who maybe not doesn't have a social game. He's obviously a younger male and he does have a social game. So perhaps because Joe is the old reliable, he's, you know, got a better chance to outdo the number eight seed. But at the same time, I mean, Fishy's onto him. Mm-hmm. Fishy's totally onto him. And if this is where you kind of get into the puzzle. Like, if Fishy was in a better position with his people, Joe would be gone. Because right. If people respected Fishy's game more and Fishy wants him gone, then he'd be gone. So I think Steven understands a little bit more about this ranking system. I mean, obviously, he's not using my ranking system, but I think someone who looks at the game and looks at all the angles is going to see that Joe is an old reliable type. And that's a dangerous type because they can win out once we get to this stage of the game. And I he's aware of it. I think just because he's not necessarily respected as much, then Joe can survive it. But I do think Joe's in danger the more Steven's able to rally the troops. I don't think he's completely, immune to this.
Do you remember what you had Joe as last season?
I think I had him as a cheerleader.
Yeah. Cheerleader Joe.
Yeah. And again, that was mostly because... you know, we had someone who was a much better reliable. I mean, he hasn't changed his game. It's just that I think being someone who comes in from the most, you know, a recent season with all these veterans, there's no way he could ingratiate himself into the mix as deeply as he did with new players. I think that was the hurdle to him being the cheerleader this year.
Okay. What's up next? Number seven.
Number seven, we are going to skip because it's the marriage of convenience person number two.
Okay.
And if I say that, people are able to usually figure out who marriage one is, and we want to build a little suspense there. So we're going to skip.
Building suspense, headed to number six.
Number six is the idiot savant.
And you really nailed this last year.
The idiot savant, yeah. The idiot savant, who did I have last year as the idiot savant?
Dan is wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan is wrong again.
Yeah, you're Dan Foley.
Yeah, the idiot savant is someone who stays in the game a really long time in spite of themselves, doesn't make the right choice, generally speaking, at any, from the outside view. You know, like, what are they doing? Why are they making the decision? And yet it works out. And they end up succeeding and getting taken along, and you're still trying to figure out why did they think that, and why did it work? It shouldn't have worked, and yet here they are. Yeah, I think it's. I don't think an idiot savant can really win the game unless everything falls right. It's a difficult thing, but because they're scheming and plotting and they're willing to take these chances, sometimes they end up going really deep. In fact, most of the time they end up going a lot further than you thought. And like, why is this person still here? Because they're taking chances that are unpredictable, and they somehow are able to convince people and snow people into thinking it's a right move for them, even though it really isn't. It may not even be a good move for themselves in the long run, but yet they make the decisions. And the idiot savant this year is none other than Kimmy Kappenberg.
Kimmy Kappenberg.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, she was, to me, she was in a good position where she was, and then all of a sudden decided that Monica had to go and initiated that whole Clamgate situation where was that really essential right there to start and undertake? And no, I really don't think it was. And I think in the long run, it makes no sense. But, you know, she was able to rally the troops behind her. And you know, really all it did was put the target on her ultimately, because now, you know, you got Joe saying, how about Kimmy? You know, because he can see that, you know, she wasn't completely unified, and he can make the argument that she wasn't unified with Bayon. And you know, it enables Joe to kind of find a target that might not have been there.
Is Kimmy going to like being the idiot savant?
No, pumpkin, no.
No, no.
Probably not. Probably not. But, you know, to me, that's kind of where she is. I mean, I give her a lot of credit for playing the game a lot better than I thought she was going to,
Yeah. Given
the long absence. And she really, up until that incident with Monica, she didn't let her emotions kind of overtake her, but I think they did in that situation. And I can see her, I can very easily see her, if given the camera time, coming up with a strategy that just really doesn't quite make sense when you look at it from the long view, but makes sense to her in the moment.
You know, I was impressed with her in that episode. I mean, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, try not to get too heated about the clams, but I thought she came off as kind of a gangster with getting rid of Monica.
Yeah, but I think it was, for me, it was believe you me, I'm rooting for Spencer, so I'm thrilled that she did it and all that stuff. Anything that keeps Spencer around for another week is fine by me. But I just think she was very much short-sighted and making moves when she doesn't have to, which is also kind of mad scientist-y, but at least with the mad scientist, which we'll get to shortly, there seems to be some sort of long-term planning involved, and you can explain yourself. To me, it was just I need this done now, and so we have to do this now, and I don't think there was a lot of long-term thought there, and I think that's a major difference. It's more like that kind of a reactionary move. Even though she could kind of, we can retcon a reason for it. I think it was just more of a reactionary move.
Okay. So then if Kimmy is the idiot savant, then what is number five?
Number five is Captain Loophole.
Captain Loophole.
And Captain Loophole is the person who is the student of the game, who is the super fan, who knows this game inside and out and can find all the subtle nuances to come up with a perfect strategy that no one's ever thought of before, or to utilize a strategy to perfection, to perhaps 3-2-1 someone and come up with that idea, perhaps to, you know, just always be thinking of, if we do this, then this, then this, then this, then this, then this, then this. You know, basically someone who, for the most part, you could say, knows it all.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that wasn't a giveaway, AJ.
All right, so you have Steven as your Captain Loophole.
Yeah, I think even beyond what Spencer brings to the game as a potential Captain Loophole, I think there is nobody, apart from perhaps what you and Josh Wigler did with your evolution of strategy, mm-hmm, for Survivor and watching every single episode, I don't think there's anyone on this cast who knows this game better than Steven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do agree that I think that he is the person who's trying to come up with, like, well, if Jeff Probst hides an idol, it's going to be over here and stuff like that. So 100% in agreement that Steven is your Captain Loophole.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to start crying about it, but I mean...
AJ, it's too soon.
I'm just saying, I think that clip totally shows how his passion for this game and how much it means to him.
That was his Wilmer Flores moment.
Yeah, I totally admire how much he cares about it. I mean, if I was ever on this show, I'm not ever going to be on the show, people. I have no interest in going on an island somewhere. But if I was ever on the show, I would put this much passion into it, and I don't see that from a lot of people. And I'm so thrilled that you know, having met Steven, and that is just weird. I mean, maybe for me, like, I've watched the show since the first episode, and to actually have met people who are on the show, just, it's really weird to watch the show now this season. It's really difficult. But and I'm rooting for him, and I feel for him, and it's just like, I get it. I get the passion, and no, I'm not mocking him at all. I mean, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, he just really wants it so bad, and I think that he's, you know, really hung up on making the right moves.
Yeah, and you know, I know that personality well of you know, you make a decision and you just like, it wasn't the right decision, and you don't sleep because you're thinking about that decision over and over and over again and weighing it, and the fact that he couldn't convince these people to get rid of Joe, it's like, when it's the right move, you know, and I agree with him, so it's like, oh, I get it.
All right, well, Captain Loophole, top five for Steven, top five, baby.
Top five, baby.
All right. So then number four is who?
Number four is the X Factor.
X Factor.
And the X Factor is the person who is different from everybody else. That could, you're generally speaking, in a season, that could be like, you know, the lone woman left on a tribe of all men kind of thing. That certainly is someone that's an obvious way of seeing what the X Factor is. Or, you know, if there's someone who's, you know, the shortest person, like if Leaf had made it, like obviously something visible that stands out that makes the person different is certainly mm-hmm. one way to look at it. Another way is just some sort of situation. You know, if there was a Redemption Island and this person had come back, that makes them different because they'd already been voted out. So there's different angles on how this person can be different, but it's kind of an obvious difference and everyone's aware of the difference. And as such, this person gets treated differently by the rest of the people. Yeah.
Could this be the only person who was from a certain season?
Yes, certainly could be someone.
Could this be the only person also who does not really care about being on a reality TV show?
It's possible. It could be someone who's potentially put on a pedestal for being away the longest.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Coming back.
All right. Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah. I just think that she's Kelly Wigglesworth. And everyone from the beginning was treating her as some sort of royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that a player who came on this season who didn't have the name value, the name recognition, and just the reverence that she had, I don't necessarily think that she'd still be here. I think a lot of her early season success is just the fact that, well, she's Kelly, and let's treat her differently. And I think that's why she's the X Factor.
So X Factor Kelly Wigglesworth. Now, here she is in the top four. Do you feel bullish on her chances?
The only reason that I might feel bullish on her chances is simply because now we're at the point where it's like, she's not really doing anything. And
ideally, you have to do something, right?
Yeah. I mean, in order to win, yeah. But let's look at this scenario. Let's say that you are in a group, and I'm not saying that there's anyone who has this particular scenario, but if you're sitting there and you're going, all right, we need to take someone with us who's a vote, but probably isn't going to win. Who should we take with us, Wigglesworth or Abby? Well, Wigglesworth is quiet. Let's keep Wigglesworth. You know, and I think, you know, who should we take with us? Someone who's going to be really strategic and trying to manipulate things? Or someone who's going to just kind of go with the flow, Wigglesworth or Spencer? Well, let's take Wigglesworth. I mean, I think it's that kind of thing that gives her longevity, is because there's so many other people who have things that people can point to and go, yeah, we can always get rid of Wigglesworth later. That's kind of where she is right now, I think.
Okay. So do you feel like that people look at her as a more reliable jury goat?
I think
it's dangerous. If you let her in that final tribal council, then she could say that this is my story, this is my arc, that I come back and win. I lost the first one, and now I'm back to win this one. This is my redemption. Even if she didn't do anything, you know, I feel like people would say, just give her the money.
Yeah, certainly it's possible. It depends who she's sitting with, of course. But, I mean, you know, when Wigglesworth was sitting there with Hatch, you know, apart from the Sue Hawk factor and that whole speech, I mean, you know, at least you could say, look at how many challenges I want. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't be here if I didn't do it myself. And there was definitely an argument to be made at that point that she should have won.
Hey, she might win a bunch of challenges.
Well, and she might, absolutely. But I think as soon as she wins a challenge, then the target gets right on her. I think the only way she makes it to the end is if she doesn't win challenges to some extent. Because she then becomes that old reliable. I just don't think she's... I think she's kind of sandbagging it a little bit. And I think that she has to, because she's easy to forget.
Yeah, that's why she was last on my list. That's why she was my ninja.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's really interesting, because in Kelly's case, I honestly think that it's an active choice to kind of be in the background, because she knew so much attention would be on her. I mean, you know, she's on the boat the first episode. Kelly Wigglesworth, let's talk to you for. And how do you feel? And it's like, whoa! Don't shine a spotlight on me. And I think mm-hmm. that it's a weird season, because in a normal season you wouldn't have someone who comes in and fights what they want to do or is trying to change perception from before. It makes this a very weird season in that regard.
AJ, what did you have Kelly Wigglesworth in the archetypes for Survivor Borneo?
Well, see, I didn't start this all the way back then. Survivor Borneo, I was just watching in awe of this amazing show. So
I thought you started this in high school, and just you know, every Survivor season that got invented, you mapped this out.
Oh, you're so kind to think that I was in high school when the show started.
You invented this for the real world, the real world New York, right?
Yeah. Well, back when I was on Remote Control, singing along with Colin, I had this idea of 12 archetypes for Remote Control.
Okay. Who is number three then? What archetype is third?
All right. Number three is the mad scientist.
Mad scientist.
And the mad scientist is someone who, to borrow from David Bloomberg, schemes and plots too much.
Mm.
Someone who's never content to just take the hand that they're dealt. They're always looking to go fish and pull some new cards in there and improve
the hand.
Go fish Bach. But, you know, just always scheming, always plotting, always looking for the angle that they can exploit, and always trying to do something to stir the pot if they can.
Hmm. All right. Well, I see some of the names that are left here.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see where you're going. Are you saying it's Cass?
I am saying that it's someone who likes a little chaos.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I was just gobsmacked this episode to see that once again, Cass had somehow found herself in the fulcrum spot where she could go either way and dictate the course of this game. And it just is amazing to me how she constantly finds herself in that position. It's such a mad scientist thing to do, to just see where the tide is going and get yourself into this spot. And I know the episode kind of showcased this as Sierra's move, but I think Cass had a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came down to Cass deciding whether or not to go through with it at the end of the day.
Sure. I mean, it wasn't her name that was being bandied about. So let's say hypothetically Spencer plays an idol, it would have been Sierra going home, not necessarily Cass, but it was, I thought, a kind of a wild move to make in the game, because in the big picture, you feel like that they're still part of the greater Bion thing, but they felt threatened enough that they felt like they have to start to move against Andrew now.
Yeah, and it's just you know, she's Chaos Cass. I mean, she couldn't help herself even to tip it a little bit at Tribal with well, I don't know which cast is going to show up tonight. You know, okay, if you're saying, I don't know, then Chaos Cast is showing up. I mean, that's such a Chaos Cast thing to say. You've taken off the sheep's clothing, as it were, and you're back to wolf mode. So she's totally, and I don't know how many people are looking at the previews for next week and everything, but I think we're going to see a lot more Chaos Cast in the future, and someone who's going to definitely stir the pot at every opportunity, because once that genie's out of the bottle, you can't stuff it back in.
It's interesting because you talk about the sheep or the wolf's clothing, and in the original rankings for Survivor Kagyan, Cass was the diplomat.
She was, and I, as I said at the time, she was a bad diplomat. She was really bad, but it's almost saying the same thing in that in her first season, she always positioned herself to be the swing vote. And that kind of was the diplomatic thing, where she was able to go between both sides and find a place where she could fit in either side. And that's a diplomatic thing. You know, Joni was like the crazy mad scientist who's always going, oh, if I take you and then I go over there and take you and you come with me and we vote him out, then everything will be good. You know, that's a little bit more of the mad scientist.
And just to put it into a time and a place, I really remember when we recorded that version. And again, that was a 18 person season. So we recorded it at 13 when it was after there were only 5 boots. So this was in the episode leading up to where Lindsay quit. Was going to be, that was where we recorded that one. So it's sort of like, you know, Cass hadn't flipped at the merge. Cass like hadn't started to get into it with Sarah yet at that point in time. So it's like through 5 episodes of that season too. And again, this is after 5 episodes here now, or after 6 episodes, where it was in the 6th episode that Cass really started to go back to Chaos Cast. That seems to be like her magic number.
Yeah, I think maybe she just has that amount of self-control.
Yeah, like any season, 2 weeks, you could put her out there and she's going to be like, you know, really calm Cast. But then, you know, you start to get to like day 16, day 17, and that's where Chaos Cast starts to show up.
That's it. The you know, it's like she's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing, and she drinks her formula and then she goes to the island and she has no formula left.
Okay, so there you go. Your mad scientist is Cass, who ironically now Cass in this season gets the archetype you assigned to Tony in the last season.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, people from a certain season see what works, sees what doesn't work in their season, and perhaps that imbues them a little bit. Who knows?
Okay. So now, AJ, what is number 2?
All right. Number 2 is where we fill in the blanks a little bit here, and it's our marriage of convenience alpha, or number 1, as it were. And generally speaking, the reason that the leader of the marriage of convenience is so high on our list is because they have a partner, a ride or die, if you will, in a situation where there's 2 votes for 1. They have someone who they can throw under the bus at the last minute and cut loose to give themselves that extra propulsion towards the final tribal. You know, so basically, marriage of convenience can be different things. On the one hand, it could actually just be a showman's kind of thing, or something where 2 people have really bonded in a relationship. You know, in a blood versus water season, it could conceivably be an actual marriage. But barring that, you know, you can have a Robin Amber situation where, okay, it'll be a marriage someday, but they were never going to turn on each other. I mean, there was a bond there, you know, but it could also be just a circumstance situation where 2 people are bonded by circumstance, kind of a Malcolm and Denise thing, where just because they were the last ones left in their tribe, they had been together for so long and been through so much that they were inseparable, you know, and again, at some point, Denise, you know, cuts them loose, but it was after a long time together. So that's kind of what the marriage is. It's either the showman's kind of angle, or in a season like this where that hasn't happened, it's 2 people who have been thrust together by circumstance and really start to rely on each other to the point that they start to act as a unit.
So to me, based on the people that we have left,
yes,
there's no choice other than it's Tasha and Savage.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the fact that the 2 of them were isolated together and were able to really come through that together. I don't think they're going to turn on each other.
Okay.
I really don't. I mean, it doesn't mean they won't vote against each other if circumstances allow, but I don't think there's going to be an active goal towards that. I think they're strong together, and I think that now that, you know, they went away for 1 week and they'll come back together, and I think they'll be good.
I don't think that's where the controversy lies. I think the controversy lies in who's the alpha, who's the beta.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, right? I think that Savage thinks he's the alpha.
I agree with that.
But I don't think Savage is the alpha.
Okay.
I think Tosh is the alpha.
I like this.
Yeah. I think Tosh is smart enough to let him think he's the alpha. But she's going to do what she has to do to make sure that she... You know, this is almost an Albert Sophie situation, where it was really hard to determine which one was truly the alpha until it came out and everyone saw it was Sophie when she's like, hey, Albert, you know, why don't you go pat him and pick that up for me? Like, oh, she is the alpha.
Drop your stack.
Yeah. You know, so I think definitely Tasha is the alpha, but she's content to let Savage think he's the alpha.
Mm-hmm. Good. I like that.
And I think that, and I think her ability to do that is actually what's going to keep the two of them together a lot longer than perhaps otherwise.
Okay. That leaves only one person left for number one in your power rankings.
Yes, indeed. That is the Diplomat. And of course, the Diplomat is kind of the person who has a good grasp on the game in terms of understanding the rules of the game. Also is really good in the social game in terms of not doing anything to piss anybody off if they can. Someone who can easily go from this tribe to that tribe to this tribe to that tribe and at least have conversations. You know, there's some people at a tribe swap who just like, well, we're not talking to you because you're in the other tribe, and they instantly become an outcast. This is someone who can kind of just worm their way in there, even if they're at the bottom of the totem pole. They're still at least in the conversation and, you know, are able to make some sort of an argument. So I think it's someone who has the ability to not seem too aligned with one particular group, that they can at least, even if they're in a solid alliance, they can at least approach the other side. They're the one who can at least get the voice heard and maybe do something with it. And you know, the benefit of this and why the Diplomat is number one is because if you're kind of at least respected by everyone, when it comes down to the final tribal, if you can make your argument that like, hey, I was friendly with you and I was friendly with you, and you respect me and you respect me, well, of course, that makes it a lot easier for anybody to vote for you.
Sneaky, sneaky!
Kelly Wentworth you have as the Diplomat.
Yeah, Kelly Wentworth is totally the Diplomat. I mean, even though she's still at the bottom of things, you know, when she comes in and she's like, has the conversation with her new tribe and says, oh, by the way, you know, Terry's the one who's been looking for the idol. And they're like, oh, okay. I mean, she was able to instigate that because people were willing to listen to her. She wasn't just running off and sulking somewhere. I mean, she's working it. And her voice was heard. And she's also able to, you know, get Joe to say, you know, I want to play with her. You know, like, they weren't like, tight by any means. They were in different tribes. And somehow she was able to ingratiate herself into the mix where I think Joe and I think Kath, I think Keith wouldn't have any issue with like bringing her along. You know, I think it's a very, very smart middle of the road position. It's also smart that she doesn't give away any information that she does not have to. So the fact that she's got that hidden immunity idol is a secret. I mean, how many people would push it one way or the other and tell that one person like, no one needs to know.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a very smart way of holding your cards close to your chest, as well as trying to get inroads with anybody so that any situation, any group that comes together, you can slip in and slide in and no one would be like, hey, what is she doing over there talking to those people? Yeah. I think it's the right way to play the game. It doesn't always win. In fact, I would say a lot of times it doesn't win, but it gives you the best odds at any given week to survive into the next week. And I think that's what this game really is all about.
She's very personable. She's very non-confrontational. And unlike her dad, was somewhat confrontational during his season. And I think that speaks well to that, you know, people aren't that worried about her and she doesn't do anything that's going to make them worried about her.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, that's a diplomat. I mean, that it's she's not going to be standing there hunting for clams and start making a case that, hey, maybe we should put the clams back. Like, it's just stay at, you know, you stay out of that kind of a situation. You don't put yourself into a situation like that.
Yeah. All right. Good list, AJ. Good job.
Well, thank you. I hope so. Yeah.
So now we have our list. Let's just reset it. Fresh meat is Keith Mayo.
Yes.
You have the ninja is Sierra. Again, that's the one that's the one that I say, it's tough, but I don't know who you put in there if you're not going to, you know, I do
that's
like your Kelly Wigglesworth as the X Factor.
Yeah.
Then cheerleader, you have Spencer. The narcissist, you have Jeremy.
Oh, snap.
Then the loose cannon, you have Abby Maria. Old reliable, you have Joe. The marriage of convenience beta is Andrew Savage. Idiot Savant is Kimmy. Captain Loophole is Steven. The X Factor is Kelly Wigglesworth. The Mad Scientist is Cass. The Marriage of Convenience Alpha is Tasha. And the Diplomat is Kelly Wentworth. All right, good list.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Like I said, you know, that doesn't mean Wentworth, well, I mean, she's got the idol, but that doesn't mean Wentworth can't go out next week. It doesn't mean that Keith is definitely next to go. It just means that given the odds, if you were to put Vegas odds on it, this would kind of be a starting point. And you can adjust for how well you think that each individual is still playing the game, individually. It's not a locked in place, but I would definitely think that people towards the top of the list have a better chance of winning this game than the people towards the bottom.
You had the Diplomat last season as Mama C.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
And did fairly well.
Yeah. She made it to the top three.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Diplomat has almost 80 to 90% chance of making the final tribal if they don't screw up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's winning that, again, it doesn't always come to fruition. It's
Diplomat Cass got to the top three.
Yeah, and you know, Sabrina and you know, she did okay in her season, but you know, she was up against that juggernaut, Kim Spradlin. So
yeah, what are you gonna do? Okay, so then AJ, just to revisit our last draft that we did, it was the Big Brother 17 draft that we had done.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
It worked out very good in your favor, despite the fact that I had the winner on my team. Somehow you still beat me by a considerable margin.
every week that went by, I was like, oh, I don't have that person. Oh, I don't have that person.
Yeah. Because AJ managed to have Vanessa and the Aust twins, Liz, Julia, and Austin all on his team, and that really helped him out. Even though I had Steve and Johnny Mac on my team, I ended up with like all these people, like Clay and Jason and Meg and Becky and Audrey, and all these did not work out great.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of the draft. I mean, you just never know, and it's a lot more difficult in Big Brother too, because you know, alliances tend to all act as a single brain. I think you don't have as much blindsidage going on that show. Yeah. So once you get on a roll, it kind of snowballs a little bit. Yeah, I
really thought that the Sixth Sense was going to have its comeuppance, and it really never did. Really never. I guess up until like the very end of the game when Steve wins. But all right. So that being said, let's get into our draft. So does that mean that I am rewarded with the number one pick in the draft?
Yeah, I do think that is our rule, that it's a loser gets the ball out or something.
Okay. All right. So if this is a snake draft, I will have the first, fourth, and fifth picks. AJ will have the second, third, sixth, and seventh, and so on and so forth. And even though you think this guy is a narcissist, I'm going to take Jeremy number one overall. I think he's got the most options going forward. I think he's got good relationships with he's got the Andrew and Tasha thing. You know, he's got something going on with, you know, with Steven. He's got a good thing going on with Joe. I feel like he's got a lot of options across the board.
Oh, these people are so stupid. You can have Jeremy.
Yeah, that's. I hope he helps to be saying this.
These guys are so dumb.
So, I'll take Jeremy number one overall. Got an idol. And again, he's another person. Didn't tell anybody that he has his idol.
Yeah, no, that's a good pick. Like I said, the narcissist role. I think he will outkick his coverage on that as well. But all right, so I get the next two.
Yes.
All right. Well. All right. I'm going to pick simply because it's funny to me that I will pick Steven so that I have him and you don't.
Okay.
But I do think his edit is interesting and I don't know, man. It's a redemption arc edit and I don't put too much into that, but nevertheless, I think no one is going to weigh all the possibilities as much as him. And I don't know that he can win a final tribal. Because I'm already seeing the signs that...
And you saw Survivor Tokachins?
Well, that. And I just... You know, we're already seeing signs that not everybody else there respects his game. And is not, like, buying in. But I'm buying in. So I'm going to go with Fishy.
Steven's the best. Know it all. Turns out love isn't that good at all.
Hey. All right. All right.
Although I don't think I'm going to get any points for winning challenges, but that's another story.
Yeah. I think we should have you get 1 point for every ring toss point made.
Oh, no. On his own or the other? Never mind. poor Steven.
Poor Steven. All right. Yeah. So then you get another pick here.
Yes, I get another pick here. I am going to go with Wentworth.
Okay. Your diplomat.
She's got the idol, and she's in good position, I think. You have a guy with an idol. I need to have someone with an idol. So.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Okay, so there you go. There is Kelly is your number three pick off the board, and she is gone. Okay, so now I get two picks. I'm going to take Tasha.
Yeah, it's a good pick. I was debating.
Give me Tasha. And I feel like, boy, give me Sierra. I mean, I've come this far. That was my pick to start the season. And so I'll take Sierra with number five.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to take Mr. Bledsoe, the young lad.
Oh.
And yeah, that's just a total... Hey, I've met the guy I'm friends with.
Homer pick.
Yeah, no, you know what? He was my number one pick in the season, in his first season, and did quite well for me. And that was before I knew him. So, you know, welcome back into the fold. Win a couple of immunities and save yourself a few times. So we'll go Spencer.
Spencer Bledsoe, 0% chance of winning this game.
Okay, now. Not nice, Cass. And I'm going to go with Joe.
I was going to grab him.
Get me some challenge wins there, hopefully.
Yeah. No, I actually think Joe is in a good spot. Joe's in a best case scenario coming into a merge that he could ever hope for.
Yeah. Unless like everyone gets together and uses him as the default. Hey, it's you know, we got our guys, you got your guys. He's not really with either of us.
Yeah.
Get out the challenge beast. Yeah.
All right. So how's this going to play out? So I've got two picks. I'm going to pick 8-9. And then you go 10, 11, I go 12, 13?
Get 12, and then there's the one person that none of us
pick. Oh, it's okay. So nobody's going to pick. Okay. So I've got three picks left of the field, which is Cass, Savage, Kimmy, Abby, Keith, and Kelly. All right. I'm going to go with... boy.
Yeah.
tricky. I mean, what do you do here? Do you go with upside? Do you go with like longevity of like the who's coming for these people picks?
Right.
I have Jeremy. I have Tasha. I kind of feel like I'm all in already with this group of the buy-on group, like sort of like painting the picture of how do I win? Mm-hmm. So if that holds, I guess give me Andrew.
Okay.
That's sort of like, now that's like you know, the Marvin's Gardens of my Monopoly here.
Yeah.
And so give me Savage, and then when is Abby Maria getting voted out? Give me Abby. That's just like my longevity pick.
Right.
That's like my person who is like, I'm trying to think of the fantasy football equivalent of this person where it's just like, you know, they're not going to win your week, but, you know, they're going to give you like 10, 11 points.
Right. Exactly. All righty. Wow. All right. So I am left with Cass and Wigglesworth and Kappenberg and Mr. Nail.
Mm-hmm.
And I need two of these. And I'm just thinking that Wigglesworth does not get me any points. Maybe longevity, but I just don't see her kicking in to competitions. I really think she hides for a little while longer. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I don't want Keith. I just don't want him. I think I'm with, let's go with Chaos and Kimmy.
Cass and Kimmy.
Because putting Cass and Spencer on the same team just seems right this season.
I definitely contemplated Cass. My worry is that there's blowback from this past
episode. Yeah, my worry is she's gone this week. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that could be a scenario. That could be a scenario. Or it could take hold, you know, what they did. You know, and
I mean,
then they have.
Ideally, my dream thing this week is, even though I just picked her, my dream thing is that all this blowback comes on Cass and the tribe is kind of split down the middle and Spencer flips and votes her out. I would love that.
Yeah. I mean, I could paint the very rosy picture for Cass where it's like now they've got the, you know, advantage on the Savage group. And they get to the merge, and then Spencer brings in Steven, and then also, you know, Cass and Sierra have a tight relationship with Wentworth and Joe and Keith from being at Takeo, and all of a sudden that group has the advantage. So
yeah,
you could see it going. That's what makes this so hard right now.
Absolutely. Right.
So then I have one pick, and then we have then the field. It's going to be either Keith or Kelly. Both of them, I feel like, are exactly the same person. Because I feel like neither of them are going to make a move. Neither of them are really targets for anybody. And both of them, I think, are going to potentially win challenges. I'm going to say, I think that the challenges that Keith wins are more fluky. I don't think Kelly Wigglesworth is sandbagging it because that would imply strategy that she's saying, I am consciously doing something. I think that if she was sandbagging things, she wouldn't have jumped out of the boat on the first day, the first second of the game. So I will say I'll take Kelly Wigglesworth.
All righty.
Can't believe Keith Nail didn't get picked.
Well, you know, we stuck with the plan and kept him out.
Yeah. So sorry about that, Keith. Okay, so Keith Nail doesn't get picked. So here is Team AJ. Ends up being Steven and Wentworth, and then Spencer and Joe, and then Cass and Kimmy. And then Team Rob ends up being Jeremy, Tasha, Sierra, and then Andrew, Abby Maria, and Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's fairly even. I think it's a lot's going to depend on where the wind blows these next few weeks. But hey, if you guys out there want to go with Team Tricky Tricky, we're welcome to have you on our rooting interest here.
So just to update our scoring system, so I believe as we stand right now, you get 1 point for each episode you stay in the game. You get 5 points for being in the final three, and then 2 points per vote. Did we abolish 5 points for being in the final three?
I think we switched it to 3 and 3, if I remember correctly. I think we can look. You can look back on the last season's page. We don't have to.
Yeah, I have to ask Matthew Falks, who is our commissioner of this league.
Whatever it was, I think it was a little bit more equitable. Whatever we came up with for the last go round, it seemed to make it a lot more even. Okay.
2 points for playing the immunity idol, 2 points for an immunity challenge win, and 1 bonus point for voting against a loved one was what we said.
Yeah, well, that was a special treat just for that one. So. Because I don't know if you heard.
Yes. Well, I'm happy I have Sierra now.
Yeah.
All right. AJ, great job as usual. Of course, you could follow AJ on Twitter. He's at AJ Mass. And then you could read all of his stuff on ESPN.com as well. AJ, what else do we need to check out?
Oh, I don't know, man. It's been a crazy, crazy time. I'm certainly on call for when the moment comes and you're unavailable for the Walking Dead because we know tick-tock, Nicole might be ready to go any day now, so I'm certainly waiting for there. You'll hear me on post-show recaps from time to time. I know Antonio and Josh have invited me on to join them on The Leftovers at some point, whether it's this week, next week, or the week after. So you'll be hearing me on the post-show recaps.
Okay, plus we'll have links to AJ's books as well on the page on robiswebsite.com. But AJ, always a pleasure to talk to you.
You as well. Should we come up with a hashtag for
yes,
this?
What is the hashtag?
The only one that I really wrote down that kind of sticks is Wilmer Fishy.
Yes, all right. Well, that's good. Hopefully both of them are crying more tears of joy soon.
Indeed.
All right. AJ, great stuff, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take care, Rob.
All right, everybody, there you have it. The great AJ Mass back here on the podcast. We're just getting started this week. We've got a all-new News AF coming up with Tyson later on this week. Plus, we're going to get into why the latest Survivor lost with David Bloomberg. And then we'll get right back into it with Survivor Know-It-Alls coming up this Wednesday and Thursday. Thanks, everybody who's been using our link for Amazon.com. We always appreciate it when you start your shopping. robiswebsite.com/Amazon. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.